Welcome, everybody. We are here for another edition, the latest edition of our Steer Center podcast. My name is Matthew Seifer. I'm the director of the Steer Center for Global Real Estate here at Georgetown University, and we're very, very pleased to have Noah Gaynor with us today, who's the co-founder and CEO of a company by the name of Parcel. Now, many of you have probably already listened to the handful of podcasts we've already done in this area of virtual real estate, and this is the latest installment of that as we work to get our arms around exactly what is the metaverse, what is virtual real estate, and how applicable and how similar is that to the world we're all more familiar with, which is the physical world. So, Noah, very excited to get a chance to talk to you today, so we appreciate you.
Thanks, Matthew, for having me on today and letting me talk more about the state of the industry and Parcel, and just generally very excited that you and others from the more traditional real estate side are taking an interest in virtual real estate.
And we're going to the best people in the business, which is why we're talking to you. So we appreciate that. So, you know, as I interview people, I always like to do my best to give a little bit of background on the person to try to humanize the individual here. So maybe talk to us a little bit. I made a joke off camera here how we're very thankful that you would do things for academic institutions other than Cornell. So maybe give us a little bit of backdrop on who you are, where you're from, and your background. By the way, for those that are looking on your LinkedIn page, you began as a summer credit analyst at Nomura, which is a very traditional start in the business world. So we'd love to hear a little bit about your background.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I did attend Cornell for undergrad. I was in the School of Hotel Administration there, hospitality management program, which is business curriculum with a service focus. I kind of gravitated towards finance and financial markets when I was in college, and always had a very sort of entrepreneurial spirit about it. I was interested in that realm, but kind of wanted to work in a way where I could be independent and be support myself through investing and kind of be my own boss at some point. That was sort of always my goal. So I did have a couple internships in more traditional finance. And then after college, I was a proprietary trader for about a year. And that was a purely, eat what you kill sort of environment, which was a fun, exciting, but crazy and unstable job. So after about a year of that, I then went to a more stable corporate role. I was a consultant in the brokerage industry, but kind of still thinking, about entrepreneurial endeavors and kind of what my next moves would be over a number of years. So I was tracking on Bitcoin around 2013-14. It was making the news for a number of different reasons, price action, and then there was the famous Mt. Gox hack. So I sort of walked away from it for a little, but then went fully down the crypto rabbit hole in 2017 when, Ethereum and Ripple were making a lot of headlines. And then I, got fully sucked in, saw it was much more than just an investment opportunity. It was kind of a revolution, and decided this is where I needed to be. So I went financially all in on it, and also decided that I wanted to dedicate my career to helping, build the revolution. So at that point, I'd been in New York for about 7 or 8 years, in a corporate job for the past 6, and just wanted to change. So I left the corporate world. I backpacked around Southeast Asia for a few months, which was an amazing opportunity, and then ultimately landed in Tel Aviv, Israel, where I was able to start working full time in the crypto industry, and they have a very vibrant crypto community there. So I was sort of able to, live abroad and start working in this industry.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And so maybe we'll sort of fast forward here. You co-founded Parcel back in all the way back in June 2021. But maybe if you could start us off with just a little bit of an overview of who Parcel is, what you're doing, and sort of what drove you and your co-founder to think about this as a business opportunity. What was the impetus there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So at a high level, Parcel is the destination for virtual real estate. So we are an agnostic, neutral platform for virtual real estate users, buyers, sellers, to come browse different virtual worlds with interactive maps, real-time price estimates. And yeah, right now we're currently supporting 5 different virtual worlds with you know, many more on the way. And the impetus really was, it was rooted in a lack of user experience that we were seeing out there in the market. So yeah, it was summer 2021. It feels like a lifetime ago at this point, but I teamed up with a friend of mine from business school. We attended Cornell Tech in New York City together, and we were friends, and we'd chat here and there about blockchain. And Ian Mukherjee is his name, by the way. He's chief product officer now. And he became very interested in, you know, he's a creative and became very interested in the 2D NFT art boom that was happening in early 2021, started minting his own NFTs. And then that, which ultimately led him to crypto gaming, because he's kind of a gamer by background. So he found a game where he wanted to buy a parcel of land and just was very frustrated with the user experience. I mean, there was a few issues. One is fragmentation of listings across different marketplaces. Two, that there was nowhere, you know, none of these marketplaces had an offering with a map view, a place to, you know, browse, you know, click around, explore, discover. And three, that the valuations and pricing were just seemingly very random, not a lot of transparency into how much a parcel should be worth. So, you know, those were the kind of three pain points that we set out to address with Parcel. And it was very much just an idea one week. And the next week, we made a pretty crude mock-up of this idea of like a kind of Zillow for the metaverse, which is something we've been called, you know, in the media. And we posted that on Reddit, and it was the top post of the day on r/Decentraland. So we got this incredible validation from the community, and just at that point started sprinting on it full time. We were at the time both working on different companies of our own, but this one, we decided to go all in on this one.
So that's great. So, you know, on your website, you talk about market price for these parcels. And obviously, it's a perfect analog to what you see at Zillow or Redfin or those kinds of things. But can you talk a little bit as best you can? I know I'm sure that's a bit of a company secret, but how do you arrive at valuation? And how much, you know, differentiation do you see? I would assume you back check to some extent, you know, assets that have traded and sort of what they've sort of traded at versus what it was maybe estimated to be. So if you could talk about just the valuation that you all do internally, I think that'd be very interesting to our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So the price estimates we have on our site are piped in from two different APIs that actually have the algorithms to determine pricing. So right now we don't have an algorithm at the moment to determine pricing. We're aggregating existing ones in the market, and we'll continue to add more. But we have looked into it, you know, pretty significantly. And pricing right now is very similar to, you know, what makes real estate valuable in the physical world. So, you know, location, location, location is, you know, rule number one that holds true in the metaverse. And, you know, there are factors like proximity to roads, landmarks, proximity to water, city centers, right, where you have good access. If you're, you know, a retail business, you want to be in a city center because there's just a lot of foot traffic. And otherwise, if you're a citizen, you want good access to, you know, digital goods and services. And then the final one, which is also true of the real world, is status. Very kind of famously, somebody paid $500,000 for a parcel next to Snoop Dogg's compound in the sandbox. And that's absolutely true here. And I think there's, you know, especially for new users that maybe don't have an understanding of what should make a parcel of land valuable, that's a pretty easy thing to latch onto. It's like there's a celebrity or a brand, you know, buying space next to them seems like kind of a safe bet, right? All else equal.
And is that proximity, you know, I've asked, it's interesting, we had a welcome weekend for our MBA students last week, and we had a student who actually owns a parcel near Snoop. And I asked him, what is the value of that to him. And his response was the visibility that you get when others are visiting Snoop, whoever visits Snoop, I have no idea. But I mean, can you talk a little bit about where are people seeing value? And is it signage and billboards and things like that? Or what's driving value there?
Yeah, I think, you know, value very much, you know, aside from those metrics that I just listed, like it is largely supply and demand, right? Just like any other market or any other asset. And for sure, like just like in the real world, you want high visibility, high foot traffic for your business, right? There's going to be more people, more eyes, more organic customers. So whether you're selling, you know, digital good or service in the metaverse, that's never going to hurt. And then, yeah, billboards and ads are a whole other thing that is starting to happen. In some places, it's not super, ad network is not that robust yet. But again, like if you want an ad and you want a billboard in Times Square, not in the middle of a field in the Midwest or something. So that's very analogous to the real world. I will say that one like kind of myth that I'd like to dispel is some people say that land in the metaverse should never be valuable because you can make unlimited amount of it. So there's no true scarcity. Our reaction to that is, well, you could say something very similar about the internet. Everyone could make a web page. I mean, people were saying this in, you know, early 2000s. Everyone can make a web page. There can be infinite of them. So none of them really should be valuable because you could just copy. But the truth is people, you know, accumulate around just a few of them. And those few web pages, or in this case, those few parcels that have all the traffic and all the eyeballs, that's really valuable. As we said, you could sell ads, goods, or services. So it doesn't worry us that there could be potentially infinite land, because I think in the end, probably a few worlds will win, and, you know, a handful of niche ones as well.
So I love that, and I appreciate that. That's a great analogy that I'm going to use in class for sure. But you know, you said at the beginning you're in five metaverses, and it's all the big ones that even I know of. And when you think about winners and losers of this virtual world and the metaverse land, if you will, what do you think is going to drive the separation of, you know, basically winners versus losers here? And is it just, if you kind of had an early mover advantage like Decentraland, you're just going to continue to gain momentum and it's going to be very difficult for new metaverses to catch up? Is it all interface? I mean, these things, as you mentioned from the very beginning, as a bit of a, I'm not a tech, you know, neophyte, but I'm definitely not super savvy. It is clunky and difficult and complicated in some of these worlds. Is it the one that is the cleanest, right? And really gets almost that sort of gaming interface better than anybody else. But I would love to hear your view on that.
Yeah. So yeah, I think in the shorter term, financial incentives could drive a lot of it, like these play to earn games. But I'm not sure how sustainable those financial incentives will be in the very long term over decades. So, you know, at Parcel, we have kind of something we say internally a lot, which is land is only as valuable as what's built on top of it. So to answer your question, you know, we believe that the worlds that will win are the ones that have the most compelling experiences built in them. And that's driven by the independent creator community. So kind of this evolution of our thinking and understanding after months of speaking to users and speaking to participants in the market led us actually to develop our newer product, which will complement the marketplace, which we call the Creatorverse, which is a platform to connect creators, you know, for them to showcase their work, showcase their portfolio, and then ultimately help them get hired by those landowners. Because we've surveyed landowners and 90% of them do not intend on selling their land. They're not here to day trade land NFTs. They want to hold it, build on top of it, earn passive income. But a lot of this land is still vacant, so they need that link to the creator. So whichever world can foster and boost and reward independent creators, we believe will be the one to win, or the ones to win.
I love that. Yeah, I've not heard that before. I like that definition. But you know, when we talk about the individuals that own the parcels and they're largely vacant, I mean, the play there is largely, I assume, appreciation, right? And just hopeful of things. Is there a true desire by the broad, you know, sort of depth of that ownership pool to build on their parcels, or do they just have the good fortune of getting in early and they've just been sort of sitting?
Yeah, so it is a mix. There are, there's a segment that's probably just holding. They're probably not even looking at or thinking about it. And it's just like, I will hold this for 30 years and see what happens. That's probably the more minority stake of landowners. The majority stake, they do want to earn passive income. Just like, you know, physical real estate, like you have a plot of land, it doesn't do you that much good. There is price appreciation, but if you could build something on top of it that gives you passive income or right some kind of fixed income, that just makes it all the better because you're getting both. You're getting the appreciation, yep, and you're getting the cash flow. So I think most landowners are looking at it in that way, which I think makes complete sense, and I would personally want to do the same.
So I was just, in preparation for this conversation, reviewing your Twitter feed, the company's feed, and you guys did a lot with the Metaverse Fashion Week, and we talk about, you know, passive income. And as a real estate person, the question I always come back to is who is going to be the tenant in those sort of lease arrangements? And naturally, you sort of gravitate to the fashion houses, like was in the Metaverse Fashion Week, and the retailers. I mean, is that the most logical sort of application here from the passive income play? Or what do you think that's going to be in the near term? And then maybe what does that look like over time?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think the near term and long term will look pretty different. In the near term, definitely, you know, it's retail brands, fashion and beauty, which often do like lead in kind of like a lot of these new markets and, you know, digital markets in the digital space. So that's definitely a big one at the moment, and I think will be for like the next year. You know, it's like Decentraland has a fashion district, and there are a lot of tenants, you know, retail tenants there that have a space and sell goods and merch. So that's one kind of like current existing passive income stream. You know, it's not a massive market, but it is starting. And like we said, you know, ads and billboards are potentially another one that too is still pretty much in its early days. But I think over time, we will see many new types of digital goods and services that do not exist today. You know, most of the metaverse is yet to be invented, and the features and the apps and experiences that we do in the metaverse have yet to be invented. So when there are more needs and businesses who have needs to have space, then like the idea of like tenant landlord becomes much, much larger.
Well, it's interesting, and this isn't necessarily a question, more musing, is just I had one guest say, look, you know, people don't like to go to the office in the real world. They're certainly not going to want to go to the office in the metaverse. So it's just sort of interesting thinking about what the likely uses will be. And that same person, I think, also said we have no clue what it's going to be like in 2 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, if you're in this space, you follow the Bored Ape Yacht Club success, and they're sort of the, I don't know, the leader or what sort of held up when it comes to this whole NFT crypto area. And they've obviously launched ApeCoin recently.
Yep.
And there's been sort of rumors about them, you know, maybe launching a metaverse themselves. I mean, which would seemingly make good sense given the visibility that they already have. I mean, and seemingly a group like that coming in with such a metaverse could swamp some of these other ones that maybe lost a little steam or don't have the same level of cachet that these Bored Ape owners have and those that follow. Do you have a view on, I know you're an intermediary on these land sales, if you will, but I was curious if you had an opinion on them in particular and their viability and with the launch of a metaverse, if they intend to do so.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think something we addressed on our Twitter feed a couple weeks ago when it was getting so much attention. So it's really interesting because they are unique compared to some of these other virtual worlds and communities. Like Bored Apes, they've done an amazing job cultivating their community, you know, growing their brand. They give creative licenses to the owners of their NFTs, so that's, you know, they're allowing them to go out and build Bored Ape things. Like there's like a Bored Ape restaurant, I think, in somewhere in California. And as far as their own virtual world or metaverse goes, our understanding is that it's quite exclusive and right now and limited to holders of Yuga Labs NFTs, I guess specifically Bored Apes. I don't know if they'll let other Yuga Labs NFT holders in, but that's not that many people. I mean, that's probably less than 50,000 people in the world. So they may well have this world with all of their community in it, but that's not scalable to billions and billions of people. So I don't think the rest of the world can go hang out in a different world that is more inclusive. And right, so I'm not seeing very clearly, I guess, what it looks like in the long, how it succeeds in the long term, unless they do make it more accessible to outsiders.
Got it. Well, that's a good response. I hadn't thought about it like that. And maybe related, when I was looking at just the parcel website, I realized you're also essentially brokering land parcels in NFT worlds and World Wide Web, which are new metaverses, which, you know, frankly, I've never heard of before. So what causes those two in particular to get traction? As somebody who's endeavoring to launch a new metaverse or an entity that's endeavoring to launch a new metaverse, how have those two maybe gained traction? Because I'm certain there's more than five. I've heard a lot more than five out there. So they obviously are large enough to hit your radar. So I would be curious to hear just how.
Yeah, it's a great question. There's new worlds popping up every day. Like even, you know, us working in the space, we're still learning about new projects every single day. And I think there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of other ones emerge in the next few years. You know, in the long run, realistically, just like any kind of like frontier market, 99% will not succeed. But, you know, what makes one world more successful than another? I think there's probably three factors. One is community, which is the users, kind of like the users and buyers of the land, but also the creators, like I mentioned before, kind of the connection between those. The second is incentives. You know, in crypto, pretty much everything in the beginning, at least in the beginning, is driven by financial incentives. Is, right, am I going to make money by entering this one project versus a different project? And then, you know, just generally some amount of hype, which is a little more nebulous and has elements of just timing and luck and just like social momentum contributing to it. So specifically for those worlds that you mentioned, like in the case of NFT worlds, I think they very cleverly built, you know, on top of Minecraft, on top of the platform, and it's accessible through the Minecraft client, which has over 140 million monthly active users. So right out of the gate, they really lowered the barrier to entry and, you know, allowed it so these people didn't have to download a new piece of software or learn anything new. It was already something they were doing. And, you know, the price of those parcels appreciated very significantly, I think, once everyone kind of that clicked with everybody. In the case of World Wide Web, I think it was more a case of community there. So World Wide Web is kind of a intentionally 2D pixelated lower tech world. And because of that, they're actually able to develop their product much faster than a lot of the 3D worlds that are trying to be super high fidelity, photorealistic, compatible with VR. A lot of those worlds are still multiple years away from being live, whereas World Wide Web is up and live and they're, you know, pushing updates like pretty regularly, which I think was just a really smart move on their end.
You spoke at the beginning of the conversation about how you are trying to enable the makers, if you will, to create on these parcels of land. And you recently launched something called Construct as part of your platform, which I'm going to take some context clues and assume that has something to do with the construction of, you know, basically buildings or whatever they may be on the parcels of land. But can you talk about that product in particular?
Yeah. So the Construct is it's a brand extension for us. It's kind of an extension of the Creativerse platform. And right now it's harnessed in an Instagram account. It's at Parcel Construct on Instagram, with the goal there being to like solely focus on creators in the metaverse, showcasing architects, builders, designers, and, you know, give them a stage to highlight their work and help foster their community. So like, there's no sort of like marketplace or transaction piece to it. It's really just the place to showcase these great creators, and it will manifest in other forms right now, today, just starting on Instagram. And we just thought it was an interesting way to extend the brand in a more like visual, you know, kind of like visual sense. It's like, what does Parcel look like on all these different platforms? Like Instagram is like image and video based versus Twitter, which is kind of like just takes a very sort of different approach.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I appreciate that. So just a couple more questions here. Number one, I read your Q1 2022 Metaverse Virtual Real Estate Report. And as a traditional real estate person, it looks and feels like a report that you might see right out of C.B. Richard Ellis or Jones Lang LaSalle in terms of sort of supply demand dynamics, fundamentals, and sort of pricing, if you will. Do you see Parcel as the virtual analog to those firms? And how do you see the differences as well?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So I think to be a virtual analog, it's true in the sense that we're becoming the authority on virtual real estate data, analytics, and information. And we feel it's our responsibility to share this largely, you know, very opaque data with the world and help them understand this state of VRE markets. Because just, you know, building this data set ourselves took months of engineering work. So it's not feasible or realistic for the average, you know, retail or individual investor to be able to pull that kind of data. So, you know, it was very much in the, so we had this data and then it was very much in our values, you know, to help eliminate the lack of transparency. And that's sort of been, you know, sort of the through line all along. I will say that it's different in that we're solving a need to help people onboard into virtual real estate. And we're doing it from a place where practically everyone is learning the absolute basics. So in the physical world, real estate is something we've all lived our entire lives around and generally have an understanding of it. You know, it's tangible. Here, there's just much, much more education, I think, that needs to happen. And again, like starting from really square one, you know, there's only around 70,000 or so wallets that hold virtual land right now. And that could be, you know, really concentrated. One individual could have 1,000 of those biggest wallets. So we're at the earliest stages of, you know, owners of land. And one other thing that I just want to highlight is, which makes us a little different from, yeah, maybe the JLLs or CBREs of the world, is that we're not an asset manager. We don't hold inventory or speculate on virtual real estate. We're just the software platform and marketplace to connect, right, the buyers and sellers.
Perfect. Noah, one of the things I, having just heard what you said, is when do you think the lay user is going to start interfacing with the metaverse? Meaning just a normal human being, not a gamer, not necessarily even a quasi techie. When does this get democratized to the masses, and what do you think is going to drive that?
Yeah, I love this question. It's something that I wanted to highlight earlier, which is, I think it's going to happen soon. It's going to start happening soon, and it's going to be in AR, not VR. So, you know, Apple is rumored to have some kind of headset, most likely AR headset, launching in the next 12 months, if not sooner. And that will really be the iPhone moment for, you know, AR and mixed reality. So, you know, a year from now or 18 months from now, we could have many, many millions of people walking around through everyday lives with some kind of AR headset on. And to me, that's, they're in the metaverse at that point. If you're living this in this mixed reality environment, to me, that is being in the metaverse. It's maybe not the open blockchain-based metaverse that we all dream about, but it's definitely a start. And yeah, that will help, I think, drive a lot of adoption for the metaverse.
Love it. All right. So I've got one last question here. I'm obviously an academic institution. You are clearly involved with your alma mater. If you had a young person come up to you and say, look, I've seen that this whole NFT boom and all the price appreciation that has occurred throughout, I feel like I'm late there. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But I feel like I'm early in the virtual real estate world. How do I get started investing other than buying everything through Parcel? What would your advice be to a young person who's interested in actually allocating some of their own capital, their family capital into the virtual land?
I'd say, you know, stick to the principles and fundamentals of investing. You know, diversification obviously is key. It's still really early. No one knows how exactly this will shake out. So I would spread your bets. You know, fixed income and dividends are also, just like in traditional investing, those are also great things to, you know, to optimize for. If you can get some kind of, you know, cash flow or income off of your investments. And if you're interested in really digging in and, you know, kind of running more analytics to make those investment decisions, I, you know, it's always good to follow the community, follow developer activity, just general community. And then, like I mentioned before, like the creator activity too, or which worlds are people building in, because the most compelling experiences will drive the most people and should help that land appreciate the most. So that would be my advice.
Love it. Well, we have Noah Gaynor here, co-founder and CEO of Parcel, the gateway to the metaverse, if you will. Noah, thank you so much for your time. It's been a great, great conversation. Really appreciate it and look forward to watching your success over the next handful of months and years here.
Thanks, Matthew. Yeah, appreciate you having me on and letting me talk about Parcel and virtual real estate, and excited to keep in touch.
All right. We appreciate everybody tuning in. Look forward to the next podcast from the Steer Center for Global Real Estate. Take care, all.